Blog Talk Radio.
Just a step, cried the sad man. Take a look down at the madman. Theater king's on. Silver wings fly beyond reason. From the flight of the seagull come the spread claws of the eagle. Only fear breaks the silence as we all kneel, pray for guidance. We'll be right back.
my freaky darlings, and welcome to Late Night Poets After Midnight Show, where you get to take a walk on the wild side. If you're into the likes of Ginsberg, Bukowski, Ferlinghetti, Kerouac, and Morrison, then you are on the right night. But please check out our other After Midnight shows. Sit in with Jeremy on Thursday as he brings you the headliner's ball, and Break On Through with Pam on Friday. Join Aphasia and Babble on Saturday as they teach you the fine art of becoming part sinner, part saint. And every other Sunday, join Robert M. as he brings you the solace of shadows. These shows are designed to shoot and color outside the lines with rich raw emotions tinged with colloquial language, thereby pushing the envelope to expression and opening up new avenues of thought through pen and voice. So, pull up a chair, relax, and open your minds. I'm Rex, and my co-host Pam Ray, and I can't wait to get into and read your words. Hey, Pam.
Hey, Rex. What's up?
Not the thing. Certainly not the temperature.
Oh, man, I get that. You know what? Our spring break started this week. Today, the teenager is home, but you would not know that Mother Nature knows it. You know, I'm pretty sure Mother Nature does not know it's spring break, because she's not only given us cold weather, she's given us a whole bunch of snow this past couple of days. So, yes. It is definitely a wee bit chilly. But I have to say, a great prompt poem offered up for inspiration for tonight, Rex. A Feast of Friends by Jim Morrison. Very cool.
I thought so. Not a whole lot of papers. That might be because of the abstract thought that he writ within it. But then again, don't know.
Yeah, sometimes sometimes you just never know. Sometimes you never know what it is that draws people to certain prompts and what, you know, doesn't, you know. There definitely was plenty to dig into. I think sometimes, you know, the more people have to read a prompt, the more likely they are to kind of wander off. But I will tell you, you may not have gotten a lot of responses, but I do happen to know that from looking at it, the rights we have, that we have quality rights for tonight. So. All right. Well, I'm going to go ahead and bring on a guest. Oh, I'm sorry. Were you going to say something?
Nope. Let's kick it off.
All right. Well, I'd like to welcome Randy to the show. Welcome, Randy. Glad you could join us.
Hello, Pam. Hello, Rex.
Hey, Randy. How you doing?
Doing pretty good. How about you folks?
Great. A little chilly.
Doing great.
Yes, it's chilly here where I am as well.
Well, at least we're not the only one left out in the cold.
That's right. Misery loves company.
Yeah, I got you there.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Well, let's get the ball rolling.
All right. Well, up first, I'm going to put your poem, Randy, A Butterfly Scream. Go ahead and give it a read for us, please.
Okay. When I first saw the prompt without reading the poem first, the first thing that came to my mind was when the music's over, because A Feast of Friends is a line in that song. And so I kind of based the poem off of both the song and the poem. And it's titled A Butterfly Scream. Humanity's existence is like music playing on a loop. Numb zombies mechanically jumping through hoops. No sense to their demise and mankind's foreclosure. Just waiting for the day when the music's finally over. The thing we call life is like some fair weather friend, a precarious, risky investment, but minus dividends. We dance robotically as if in an alternate dimension, as oblivious as delinquent boys attitude attention. We're continually confused by the face in the mirror saying you're free, because this is what we want to hear. Supported by a feast of friends all gathered outside, helping to create the illusion that everyone is alive. Maybe hoping that death will make angels of us all and somehow deliver us from a fatal, inevitable fall, save for the mutants who have depleted the earth, focused on pleasure, denying Mother Nature's worth. Deaf to the scream of a butterfly's prophetic sound, distracted, we won't put our ear down to the ground. Now ravaged, plundered, no longer filled with clover. Just wait, awaiting the end, when the music's finally over. End poem.
Great read, Randy. Thank you very much. All right, Pam, let's kick us off.
Yes, definitely a great read. First of all, I like the title, A Butterfly Scream. You know, the idea of something small and silent that we don't hear and yet sends that message of despair. I also like that you were inspired by both the song When the Music's Over and the poem that Rex offered up for inspiration. I like that the main message that I get from this is the idea of how we robotically go through the expectations of life without truly living, like without truly fully embracing and living life to the fullest. We just go through the motions. I really like where you say numb zombies mechanically jumping through hoops, no sense of their demise and mankind's foreclosure, just waiting for the day when the music's finally over. And we're continually confused by the face in the mirror saying you're free because it is what we want to hear, supported by a feast of friends all gathered outside, helping to create the illusion that everyone is alive. And I like how you bring in the idea of the feast of friends as being those people who support false notions, those people who encourage others to keep going along with the illusion because you don't want to see the truth. They just want you to keep living your hamster wheel life in all its mundane illusions. So powerful and thoughtful, right, and very well done.
Thanks, Pam.
Nice, Pam. Well, you hit on the thought of the end as well as a feast of friends, but also the scream of the butterfly, another touch, and also that touch that everyone is alive. You roll into that notion, especially since the voice you've offered up here is the reality from that book, no one here gets out alive. And you bite into that subject of right at the top, the first line. Human existence is like music playing on a loop, numb zombies mechanically jumping through hoops. No sense of their demise and mankind's foreclosure, just waiting for the day when the music's finally over. Yes, and then you bite into the back end of this, now ravaged, plundered, no longer filled with clover, just waiting the end when the music's finally over. There is a quiet note to self-destruction within this as well. And that inevitable note of not paying attention to that which is going on around you. So you walk within that environment and let it go instead of paying heed to the beauty that is and would remain to be if you were but paying attention to that which is going on to begin with. Nicely done, Randy.
Thanks, Rex. Yeah, I try to keep it along with the Morrison's rather fatalistic approach to poetry and songwriting. And so I try to keep it in that vein.
Oh, you did just that? All right, Pam. Where would you like to go next?
All right. Up next, we have Cling by T.G. Rain. And Rex, go ahead and give it a read for us, please.
Cling by T.G. Rain. Friends are like film, making your movie more real. and poem. Short, sweet, to the point. And Randy, what you think?
Well, it kind of took me by surprise. It was over before it started. Friends are like film, making your movie more real. A lot more upbeat than my poem, that's for sure. I mean, it's, you know, people make your life real in the film of your life. So, and its brevity, it said a lot, though. It was nice.
Excellent. Thank you very much. And Pam?
Yeah, sometimes in contests, I like to tell people, instead of getting specific word counts, I say no mega brevity and no novels. And I have to say, if somebody asks me for an example of a mega brevity, I would point to this poem. Like you said, it's short, it's sweet, takes you by surprise, and clever use of a minimal amount of words. So well done.
It is that, because he bites into Morrison's background. Friends are like film, making your movie more real. The idea, he was a film student, and he did make his own movie for a class when he was in college. And the idea of film also being that that touch of they are here briefly and then gone, because he offered up Kling as the notation to the title. Film, like that film you use to cling to things to keep them fresh. But he also offers that second line, making your movie more real. The double bite in the real works both ways, whether it's real as in R-E-A-L, as in here, now, and obvious, or real, the double thought within that, R-E-E-L, as in the movie Real itself. A double thought to film, and you can either roll it within the canister or you can actually live it. So, nicely done, TJ. I like that thought. All right, Pam.
All right. Up next, we have Raven's Wedding by Betty Page. Come ride with me, sweet, deep down in the underworld where dark creatures roam. A celebration, Raven's in her wedding dress awaiting her groom. Punk rock atmosphere, poetic sweet fantasies. He's dressed all in black, holds a garnet ring adorned with onyx diamonds waiting for his bride. Underworld midnight, dark around, snatches up them both. Violent whirlwinds, flames of ruby gold topaz burst from dragon's mouth. Flight towards the heavens to cotton candy castles, high peaceful on clouds. Brand new angel wings emerge from out of their backs. Jet black turns white gold. Crimson red roses shimmering with fairy dust lives ever after. End poem.
Great read, Pam. And Betty took the lines, death makes angels of us all and gives us wings where we had shoulders smooth as raven's claws. No more money, no more fancy dress. This other kingdom seems by far the best. Nicely touched on, Betty. Randy, why don't you kick us off? What you think about Betty? Something a little different.
Yeah, it was. Excuse me. It was indeed. I kind of expected the way it was starting off that it might take a sensual turn, but it actually didn't. It stayed dark, but very well done. Very well written, as always, by Betty. She always produces wonderful poems, and this is certainly one. I love the all the descriptive lines. Holds a garment ring adorned with onyx diamonds, waiting for his bride. And punk rock atmosphere, poetic sweet fantasies. He's dressed all in black. I mean, each and every stanza it stands alone on its own. With very good to script lines. Lights toward heaven, to cotton candy castles. I thought that was kind of a strange one thrown in there, as it was all dark, and then we got the cotton candy castles thrown in. by Peaceful on Clouds, which was kind of nice. But yeah, I enjoyed it.
Excellent. Thank you, Randy. All right, Pam, you got to read it.
Yes. Wonderful 575 lines. Great imagery and metaphors. I like that she brings us into a dark tale of magic and mythology and of love. You know, I thought there's a wonderful take on the prompt. I like how she has the name Raven, like it could be actually a name, or it could actually be physically a raven, like a mythological manifestation of the raven. And I thought that was great because it fits with the prompt, with the specific line she chose, but it also fits with the idea that in many cultures and mythology, a raven is a messenger of death. And I like how she brings us into this underworld darkness, into this wedding of these two saying their I do's. And it's like almost as if them being joined in marriage and giving that kiss as husband and wife is that moment that sends them spiraling up towards heaven. And I like how that could be like that they actually are going to heaven. They are transforming to the point of going from hell to heaven. So it's a spiritual journey, or can just be a metaphor for the idea of being high on love. I really like where she brings in the imagery of punk rock atmosphere, poetic sweet fantasies. He's dressed all in black, underworlds, midnight, dark angels swirling around, snatches up them both. Wonderful line with lines and a true fairy tale type atmosphere to it. So very well done.
Like I said, it is dark and gothic, and it does walk in with that realm of ravens, them being an unkindness. So the underworld fits with that angle rolling through the first six stanzas. And then it is about transformation, in that unkindness to find that love makes the transformation to actually finding those angel wings and going from jet black to white gold and finding a sense of peace past the unkindness itself. So nicely done, Betty. All right. What do you want to go next?
All right. Let's see what we have next. Next, we have Ballad of Death by Dammit Dave. And Randy, would you give that a read for us, please?
Sure. Ballad of Death. My life was so unsettled, and I struggled with the pain, moving on, a constant battle, facing storms, the pouring rain. Then my death, it seemed so welcome, I relinquished heart and soul, but I didn't understand that it would be so dark and cold. I find death more of a burden than my life could ever be. No one here to lend a shoulder, not a soul to comfort me. Had no welcome from St. Peter, and no choir of angels sang. No hellfire to light the darkness, not a single church bell rang. Though my life could be unpleasant, there were times of ecstasy. I know now it was much better than the grave that cradles me. Silent prayers still go unanswered. There are whispers in the wind. Friend, I pray you live life fully. Ceaseless night awaits in the end, in poem.
Great read, Randy. Thank you very much. All right, Pam, what do you think?
Yeah, I really like this one. You know, as always, Dave has a wonderful rhyme and flow. I like the title, Ballad of Death. It's a thoughtful and heartfelt write on the couple different ideas. You know, I think the main idea for me of this is living in the moment and appreciating the gifts we have in life before it's all gone, you know, because, you know, while, you know, depending on your beliefs, you know, you can have, you know, faith and hope that there's something afterwards, But there's that uncertainty of if that's, you know, for sure. And so, you know, you really, and even if you do believe in an afterlife, that doesn't mean you dismiss this life, because there's so many gifts to be offered up, so much to express. But there's a sadness. And I find death more of a burden than my life could ever be. No one here to lend a shoulder, not a soul to comfort me. Had no welcome from St. Peter and no choir of angels sang. No hellfire to light the darkness, not a single church bell rang. It's almost like the idea of in that moment, you know, the emptiness and the silence is more painful than anything else. And I really like the end lines, too, where it says, friend, I pray you live life fully, ceaseless night waits in the end. Especially, friend, I pray you live life fully, because that's really what we should all be doing. No matter what we believe about the afterlife, we should really be embracing this life and appreciating it for what it is. So, excellent write and very well done.
Nicely said. I'm going to take the thought of death here as a metaphor, kind of shutting themselves out from life because of that which has been exposed to. Because he hits in those last two stanzas, though my life could be unpleasant, there were times of ecstasy. I know it was much better than the grave that cradles me. That grave being self-imposed, taking oneself out of the norm of life and wallowing in that darkness. And then silent prayers still go unanswered. They are whispers in the wind. Friend, I pray that you live the life fully. Senseless night waits in the end. That senseless night is extreme loneliness. And being that hermit away from anyone and everything that matters. And then the full understanding, hey, it could be unpleasant, but at least within that unpleasantness at times, there is a notation and semblance of feeling, being alive. In when you run yourself into an exile, it is like death embalms you in the moment because you've chosen to walk outside the normal range of life itself and give in to the darkness that your mind has ceded to. So nicely done, Dave. And Randy, you read that well. What about you?
Yes, excuse me. Yeah, I agree with both of you. You know, it was a kind of fatalistic look back as he's dead. But, you know, right, the opening stanza, my life was so unsettled and I struggled with the pain, moving on, constant battle, facing storms of pouring rain. I mean, okay, life was bad, but, you know, death is worse. So he looks then my death had seemed so welcome. I relinquished heart and soul, but I didn't understand that it would be so dark and cold. The realization of death is much more bitter than the harshness of life. And as you touched on, you know, he talks about, though my life could be unpleasant, there were times of ecstasy. So realizing too late that life, as bad as we might think it is better than the alternative. Friend, I pray you live life fully. Ceaseless night awaits in the end. So, it was, as usual, very well done by Gamma Dave. I liked it.
Excellent. Thank you, Randy. All right, Cam. Where would you like to go?
Well, first of all, before we go on to the next poem, I would like to welcome Lou to the show. Welcome, Lou. Glad you could join us.
Hi, Sam. Hi, Rexy.
Hello.
Hey, guys.
Doing?
My dingy self is here tonight. Lack of sleep makes me dingy.
Very cool. Very cool. All
happy
right.
to be
well,
here.
Up. Yeah, glad to have you here. And we have up next, Longed for Death, but Was Granted Love Instead by Jenny Hunt, 2017. And, of course, Lou, you know I'm going to do the same thing to you that you did to me. So go ahead,
you know it's love. You know it's love. You know I love you. Okay. Longed for death, but was granted love instead, by Jenny Hunt, 2017. Planned my funeral. Never planned for a marriage. Servants of death had my life's power. Plans changed. Now, in face of death, I cower. Negatively poured out, in came love. First came love, then came baby in her baby carriage. If they can't save me, nothing will. Can't imagine my life without them now. Fearing their death, not mine. I want to still. For now, I will live for them on higher ground. Painfully perish, possibly, is my future. Preferably, possibly, peace, I wish it to be. When in love, someone always dies first, or is the first to hurt. If I had to choose, I wish for to die first. Until death do us part, I promise him, same as he promised me. Gambling, losing my life, I hope to win. My heart will shatter. If it's him first, that's it's meant to be. End poem.
Great read, Lou. Thank you very much. And Randy, why don't you kick us off? What'd you think?
Oh, you know what? Randy had to go.
Okay. Then I guess it's your turn.
Yeah. All right. Well, great read, first of all, Lou. Wonderful write by Jenny Hunt. I'm so glad that Jenny's been inspired so much by the Late Night Poets contests and shows. It's been good to see her. Now, this has a lot of heart in it, a lot of fight reality. It definitely feels very personal, and I'm glad she's willing to share this part of her life with us. I like how it speaks on the idea of being someone who's trapped in depression, who feels like there's no purpose in living anymore, and you know, wishing for that death. And it opens up immediately the lines, planned my funeral, never planned for marriage. Servants of death had my life's power. That obsession with death, that idea that life isn't going to get any better, so it might as well end. And then those unexpected gifts come along. I like how she uses some alliteration in here, especially with painfully perish plausibly. In my future, preferably possible peaceful, I wish it to be. Wonderful use of alliteration, and then the idea of taking that gamble and finding true love. And it's not only about the love of a husband or of a partner, but also of a child, and finding purpose in you know, loving both of them and having both of them to love you. I did like the first came love, then came baby and her baby carriage, because, of course, it makes you think of that classic little ditty, which, you know, just put a smile on your face. And then, of course, we'll stand the following. If they can't save me, nothing will. Can't imagine my life without them now. Fearing their death, not mine. Especially fearing their death, not mine, I think is a line that many mothers and fathers can relate to, in the idea that all of a sudden there's somebody in your life that you care about more than yourself. So wonderful write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Lou, you read that well. What about you?
You know, sometimes you never know as you age, as time goes by, what's going to change in your life. And, you know, sometimes, you know, our lives have been so difficult that death is not something that is something we fear. You know, it's a welcoming, because at least in death you sleep forever in peace instead of having to suffer. But if you get somebody that comes in your life, another mate, a girlfriend, boyfriend, husband, wife, life partner, they can really knock that darkness back, you know, especially since we love them and they love us. It's now being returned. So there's a new, different light in there. And especially like with children, somebody we love, our parent, you know, we would suffer for them and we would die for them before we would ourselves. And, you know, I love that she brought this out, because it is what we wish for and what we want. We cannot control if the person that we love is going to die before us. But the thing is that it, like she brings here, that it's meant to be. We can't control things.
Oh, nice, Lou. Thank you. All right. Jen took on a couple of lines. Servants had the power, and unannounced, unplanned for, like a scaring, overcrowding vest you brought to bed, death makes angels of us all and gets its wings where its shoulders smooth as raven claws. No more money, no more fancy dress. This other kingdom seems by far the best, until its other jaw reveals incest and lose obedience to a vegetable law. I will not tell. So, nicely done with those lines there, Jen. And it kind of hits me, that opening, the best laid plans of mice and men often go awry. And this kind of also offers up that notation of we get what we need, not what we want. And in this rendition of thought, you needed something a little bit deeper to wake you up from that notation of planning for one's death instead of living one's life. And that little notation was falling in love and the baby coming next. So after that, you got actually what you really wanted but needed in the moment to wake you up. That there's kind of a nice clarion call to a touch of spirituality in this, and a realization that there's more than just planning one's eventual demise. There's the life that encompasses it in between birth and death. So I like this. Nicely done.
Great observations there, Rex, especially on the first line with the nod toward being towards the best laid plans of mice and men often go awry. And Jen says, right on, Rex. Yes, great observation.
All right, so where would you like to go next?
All right, well, up next we have Twofold to Feed by Bill Schiller. And go ahead, Rex, and give that a read for us, please.
Twofold to Feed by Bill Schiller. I'm tired of dissension. I'm exhausted by the pulchritude of personalities, subdued by sycophancy, harbingers of hopelessness, foaming at mouth like rabid dogs. I'm sick of the prodding from frogs drowning in a swamp. I stomp my feet. I scream into the sky. The more I see, the more I wish to be blind. I'd rather plant tulips than tumble in the weeds. I refuse to fertilize any unworthy lead. Today, I pray more will die with a faith that fails confidence. Today I pray, tomorrow I'll beg forgiveness. I'm sick of the fools that feed on filth of lies. Truth is only more cancer for minds already metastasized. I will not surrender to spite, despite any that deserve. I'm more inclined to invite deplorables to dine and drink with blind eyes. This elitist welcomes all from angels to sinners, for the vultures that await outside, all people are potential good. And Paul. And Lou, why don't we kick it with you first, please?
Well, I thought you did a fabulous read of Bill's poem. The title is just perfect. too full to feed. It's almost like I have too many things I want to say and my mouth is so full with the different things that, you know, that we see and we deal with. I mean, he starts off right away, I'm tired of dissension. I'm exhausted by the turpitude of personality subdued by its sycophant thing. You know, you've always got those kiss asses that will never finish sucking up to get wherever they need to get. And then, you know, he talks about, you know, foaming at the mouth like rabid dogs, you know, where, you know, you do get so frustrated. You want to stomp your feet and you want to scream to the sky, you know, that, you know, stop this constant lies and bull crap. And, you know, just for example, this going, you know, just like, oh, well, you know, we might have a recession. So what do? They raise the price of food. They raise the price of gas. They just raise the price of everything before anything happens that never happens at times, you know. And I, you know, you know, this one made sense to me. I'd rather plant tulips than tumble in the weeds. We got those big weeds that roll around with these little nasty thorns. Yeah, you make snowmen out of them, but if they hit you good, you're just full of needles like a porcupine. And people tend to do that to you with their attitude, with their stupidity. You know, this is what I love so much about this poem. And also about the frogs and the filth of lies, and I could go on and on. So, back to you.
Nicely said, Lou. Thank you very much. All right, Pam, what you got?
Yeah, that was a great comment from Lou. I really enjoy this one. It's got such biting humor to it. I do like that it's become the idea of not being that kiss ass. It's become the idea of seeing the ugliness of the world and of people and their attitudes and refusing to give into it. I really like the subdued by sycophancy, harbingers of hopelessness, foaming at mouth like rabid dogs. I'm sick of the prodding from frogs drowning in a swamp. You know, that idea of people telling you what to do when they don't even have their own life together. You know, and I'm sick of the fools that feed on filth of lies. Truth is only more cancer for minds already mesticized. I will not surrender despite any that deserve. And I like that line. I will not surrender despite. You know, you can be hateful. You can give in to hate. But I'm not going to. I'm going to be true to myself. And, of course, the vultures that wait outside was a perfect metaphor for those people who just can't wait for you to mess up because they just want to devour your soul. So very cool, right? Hard-hitting and edgy and definitely worthy of a Jim Morrison comp. So very well done.
Well said, ladies. It's those last two lines that make a whole lot of sense. For the vultures that wait outside, all people are potential bitter. And that means everybody sitting on the bottom rung of each ladder around the world. The idea of being tired of dissension, that comes when you want to, you know, the best way to control people is you keep them bitch slapping and backbiting each other, because if they're doing that, then they don't have the wherewithal or the perspicacity to go after those who are actually causing the rift. And that's the ones we put in power. And that's what this is all about. Mm-hmm. Bugger the bad, good time to just sit down and have a meal with people. After all, we are of the same ilk. And it should be an easy fix to things if we just sat down across the table, broke bread, have a few drinks, and settled up with those above instead of settling down with our lot in life, backbiting and killing each other off. An easy fix. Fight the bastards sometime. Nicely done, Bill. All right, Pam, what we got next?
All right, well, let's see here. Up next, we have As Old as Time by Weaver of Dreams, our good old Kate. And she was nice enough to supply us with a SoundCloud. So here we go.
Thy voice is in mine head again. Upper echelon suave, cool, collected. Thou lovest me not, but needeth mine soul to swell the numbers thou hast so far garnered and damned. Assure me all thou wish, that therein lies a place for me, with manna, celestial music, mine own cloud and harp. Yet when cometh the hour, dank, dark caverns will await those of us who hearkened to thy dulcet cri de coeur.
Great read, Kate. Thank you for the sound card. It is very much appreciated. And bam.
I like this. I like that she played with the old English, with the thou and the loveth and the needeth. And she seems to have had a lot of fun with it. And the one thing I like is that it doesn't seem forced. Like, she really seems to know what she's doing. And I say that because sometimes you'll see people throw in thous and thys and these and all that. And they, it just seems like it's like crammed in there, like, you know, like forced into there, and it doesn't have a natural flow. But here with Weaver's poem, it has a natural flow. And I like that she decided to be creative with that. And I thought it was a wonderful write on empty promises made, either by other people or by yourself, to yourself. The idea of offering up that there's something better after this life, only to find out that it's that darkest hour approaching. You know, great two stanzas. She's really packed a lot into a short write, but I especially like, and I like how this feels like it could be a scene in a Shakespearean play. Assure me all thou wish, that therein lies a place for me, with manna, celestial music, mine own cloud and harp. Yet when cometh the hour, dank dark caverns will await those of us who hearkened to thy dulcet cri de coeur. I mean, can't you just picture an actor on stage just saying those lines in a play? I mean, it's just wonderful to vision that. So excellent write and very well done.
Oh, thank you, Pam. And Lou, how about you?
You know, I really enjoyed this poem because, you know, she says that this is as old as time, you know, and it's so true. Have things really changed over time? The things that we've been told, the things that we're forced to be told and are forced to be obedient to. But it's not done out of the love of the people. It is done out of the love of thyself. And I really like the creative core that she brings up, because it could be a passionate cry, an outcry of appeal or protest or agreement. And, you know, and this for me was her way of protesting that that upper echelon suave, cool and collected bull crap that is just dished out over the thousands of years of where humanity has found itself to this time. And, you know, just like with anybody else, well, whatever, you can say whatever. I wish for a peace, celestial music, you know, mine own cloud and harp, you know, that I would rather be by myself than to be with people who are like this. And they're eventually going to get their comeuppance.
Ooh, I like that. I kind of walk that same angle. There's a reason he is called Old Scratch, as he tickles the mind and the body with a little itch that you just need to sate in the moment. And that just leads you down that noted path.
We lost Scratchy, or did I? Okay.
Did we lose
for a second
Rex?
There, I thought it was me. Oh, no.
No, we lost Rex.
The host nightmare that you get dropped.
Yes, and unfortunately, he can't call himself back. I have to call him.
Okay.
So what I'm going to do is I'm actually going to put up a poem for you to read. And if we're not back, we should be, but if we're not back by the time you're done reading, just go straight into commenting. I'm going to go into the green room and try to grab Rex from jumping out the window again. All right. So I have up Falling Out of Feeling by Ben Hart. And go ahead and give that a read, please.
All right. Thank you, Pam. Falling Out of Feeling by Ben Hart. I, you, stuck in the shallows, you dream of leaving. I dream of loving, but I'm told to let go. You sing to the reeds, never to me, never to me. Do you admit to the bleeding you sing? Mama, I am aching away in the blood-soaked shadows. Can you not see that behind your daughter's eyes, all that you have birthed is broken? What will it take for you to find me? Mama, when will you find me? Me. And in my rush to mend your breaking, to take away your aching, and have it be buried upon sunset over hallowed meadows. My tungsten tongue stumbles down poetic steps to make sure all the lies sound really pretty when spoken. All I ever had were stories, the way things could have been, but you never seemed that interested in my ifs and whens. Don't you think I don't catch you looking? How cruel of you to give the poet a muse with no chance of loving. And I know I could end this game, but giving truth a name. But I was never one for taking a chance. And you like those odds. Three, us. You used to want to die, and sometimes so did I. I just didn't want to go alone, but that was exactly how you always planned to go. Though we still carry the shallows like shackles around our ankles with every heavy step, please think of the music and that everything truly soothing was born from human suffering. And I do not hate to see you're happier with him than you could ever be with me. I'm the one you'll suffer with, but never admit the bleeding. Because you're afraid my giving hands might be healing to a degree. You did not agree to, because you're afraid if you ever need me, I'd have fallen out of feeling again. And I don't know, I was blue before the bruising, or if what your eyes are telling me is true, that you now, you're breaking my heart upon your every intrusion into music, singing, happier, pretty picture with some new, pretty little blue in poem.
Great read, Lou. Thank you very much for the read. Pam, why don't you kick us off?
All right. I'd be happy to. Yes, I could really hear the emotion in your voice as you read this, Lou. It was beautifully read. I thought this was a wonderful vignette, and I like how he breaks it down into the three parts, the part that is the other person, the part is that is them, and the part that is the two of them together. Just a beautiful, powerful, and emotive imagery and metaphors. The main message I got from this, right, was the idea of looking back at a love that once was, and then the loss felt, and really trying to make sense of it all. I really like with the you where it says, "Mama, I am aching away in blood-soaked shadows. Can you not see what that behind your daughter's eyes are? All that you've birthed is broken. What will it take for you to find me? Mama, when will you find me?" It's that idea of trying to connect with a parent that was perhaps emotionally distant. And then the me part, I really like, "All I ever had were stories, the way things could have been, but you never seemed that interested in my ifs and when." You know, I think that's a line that many of us who write poetry can relate to, especially if we grow up in a family or, you know, that doesn't really understand or appreciate, you know, how the poetic mind works. Then for the last part, my favorite section was the thought where it says, there was a part that it gave me the thought of the idea of don't turn back to me because it will probably be too late. Oh, here it was. "My given hands might be healing to a degree you did not agree to because you're afraid if you ever need me, I had fallen out of feeling again." Yeah, and there's a couple thoughts that come to that. The first thought was the idea of, you know, if you turn around with somebody, it might be too late. But I think there's also that idea of saying, you know what, you may have decided to walk away, but I will be here waiting, whatever capacity you need me in. You know, whether it's as a friend or more than a friend, you know, I'll be here. So, excellent write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. Lou, you put some real heart feeling in that read. What do you think?
You know, for me, you know, sometimes you love somebody and they keep a friendship with you because they need you, even though you know you're using them, and you know you're never going to return that friendship or that love. You know, he says, "And in my rush to mend your breaking, to take away your aching, and have it buried upon sunset over hollowed meadows, my tungsten tongue stumbles down poetic steps to make sure all life sounds real pretty when spoken." You know, and sometimes, you know, your tongue may wag and you might tell somebody what they want to hear because, you know, like Pam was bringing out, you know, they can't hear it. They can't deal with the truth. And, you know, so they'd rather be with somebody else who they supposedly think will make them happen. But obviously it's not because, you know, she's suffering. You know, she's still keeping that friendship some way linked. Because he said, you know, and he brings out here, "With every heavy step, please think of the music and that everything truly soothing was born from human suffering." You know, for him to, for her to look at him and to validate his suffering. And, you know, like Pam brought out, you know, sometimes that just will never, ever happen.
I like that, Lou. Thank you. That the second angle caught me with his title to me because what he offered me. "And in my rush to mend your breaking, to take away your aching, and have it be buried on sunset over hallowed meadows, my tungsten tongue stumbled down poetic steps to make sure all the lies sound real pretty when spoken. Don't think I don't catch you looking How cruel of you to give the poet a muse with no chance of loving. And I know I could end this game by giving truth a name, but I was never one for taking a chance, and you like those odds. Oof. That was a nice hard note, offering a sense of truth right there, even despite that the fact that she's the muse in the moment, giving birth to all this thought, the pain, the angst that's rolling through this. Yes, he's not willing to take that chance of stepping forward, and she enjoys the odds of not being there while still playing the tag-along game, so to speak, because she might be amused in the moment, or it's playing off some other angle, because the next one involves him, and there's a bleeding there that he can't be involved in because it walked in someone else's shoes. Nicely done, Ben. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. All right, Dan.
All right. Up next, we have Invitation by Eric Svensson. And Eric was nice enough to make us a SoundCloud. So here we go.
Invitation. Blue Owl Eyes, Google Google, Renato Cazzara's Invitation Painting. Oliver Hardy, Stan Laurel, Elvis Presley, Clark Gable, John Wayne, Charlie Chaplin, Marilyn Monroe, James Dean, Humphrey Bogart, Fred Astaire, Cary Grant, Boris Karloff as Frankenstein's monster, Marlon Brando, Grecian curled hair, Jim manifests gently next to me. He often does, but let's keep that secret in the closet. Of late, governments are doing their dampest to spook us all shitless. Let's not rattle any more cagey foxes. Iguana peaceful, Jim studies me with his luscious eyes. Zara is such a cool dude with his take on the Last Supper, don't you think? Fact is, there's a parallel between his painting and my A Feast of Friends. Lilt and tilt of Jim's calm voice lulls, calms my busy mind hole, enlarges my uppity heartbeat space. And canny how Cazzara's painting came to mind when I read your A Feast of Friends. Pan delightful, Jim beams wide open soul window doors. Clear audience intones, this isn't the end, but the beginning. Quiet reflection, silent reverie. But you ain't a painter, are you? Kind of a word painter, I dabble in poetry. Jim grabs me and gives me a giant bear hug. So, tell me about your tribe. You'd rather be on earth with them than playing harps in heaven, wouldn't you? Because they're a cool bunch of creatives, aren't they? My reptilian brain tickles, my gut spins pickles. Well, Jim, I kind of sense you around when we do poetry on you. Of course you do, man. I so dig your late night poet's drive. Open-mindedness makes for big-heartedness. Can I quote you on that, Jim? Please do, Alan Pease of Stargate, and don't you girls and boys go forth boldly. Your poetic lyrics were so prophetic, Jim. You ain't seen nothing yet, buddy. Believe it or not, love will still overcome the current banistry cesspool, willful nightmare. Cross your heart, promise never to die, Jim. Words sent forth, never die, buddy. That's how creation came about. A pinch of salt, prairies full of darn good humor, and Bob's your auntie's uncle, thrice removed. End poem.
Oh, great read, Eric. Thank you very much for the SoundCloud. It is much appreciated. Wild ride. Lou, why don't we start with you, please?
I don't think I stopped grinning from the beginning of his poem to the end. This was very artful. I love the conversation, the entire conversation, but he talks about government and he talks about, you know, this friendship that he has with him. And it's just like right here, lift and tilt of Jim's calm voice low, calm of my busy mind whole, enlarges my uppity heartbeat space. I just, uncanny how Casaro's painting came to mind when I read your A Feast of Friends. And delightful, Jim beams wide open, so window doors. You know, this was just magical, delightful, from the first stanza to the last stanza. And I thoroughly enjoyed the entire poem, and I'm so glad I called in. This was just fantastic.
Excellent.
Stargate people.
Yeah. Oh, thank you, Lou. All right, Pam, what about you?
Oh, I really enjoyed this one. I read it earlier, and it had me smiling. And, you know, just like Lou this time around, it had me smiling. I had to put this one on one of my amazing rights list and then pin it to my stage because, you know, I just feel like it's one of those that I'm going to enjoy going back to. First of all, I like the mention of the artist and the painting that he pinned or attached to his poem. I'm going to have to check that artist out more because I think I might want to run a contest on them. And I just adore how much Eric had fun with this and how it's this conversation between him and Jim. I love the nod towards L&P. I really like how the conversation and the poem, this imaginary conversation and the poem itself reflects on the way that friendship, art, and poetry really moves our spirits and gives us just a sense of, camaraderie and connection. I like that he gives a little nod towards Jim Morrison being the Lizard King with the iguana peaceful Jim studying me with his luscious eyes. And then my reptilian brain tickles, my gut spins pickles. And that's just a fun line. And, of course, you know, when they're talking about the late night poets group. Wow, Jim, I kind of sent you around whenever we do poetry on you. Of course you do, man. I so dig your late night poets tribe. Open-mindedness makes for big-heartedness. Can I quote you on that, Jim? Please do. L&P is a stargate, and don't you gals and boys go forth boldly. Oh, man, this just had me smiling. Excellent write and very well done.
Thank you, ladies. This was a fun piece. That opening stanza was wild. And then he drops that second stanza. He delivers himself unto the moment as well. Grecian curled hair, Jim manifests gently next to me. He often does. But let's keep that secret in the closet. Of late, governments are doing the damnedest to spook us all shitless. Let's not rattle any more cagey boxes. Nice tone there. Then that offering, the thought of the Last Supper with Sarah's offering his painting to a feast of friends. And then he offers up, uncanny how Sarah's painting came to mind when I read your A Feast of Friends. And then pan delightful, Jim Beam's wide open soul window doors, clear audience in tones. This isn't the end, but the beginning. Nice touch, Luke. The clairvoyance, the thought of Pan Delightful, and Jim Beam's there's a kind of a double entendre note there. Jim Beaming, but also Jim Beam Liquor. So there's a little bit of bourbon in that moment. And the fourth A, I read the poem, and I immediately saw that picture and offered it up as a kind of notation to the Feast of Friends itself. Those friends, the sort of Marlon Hardy, Marlon Brando, Boris Carter, Elvis Presley.
Mm-hmm.
What a hell of a group to have around to enjoy company of. And let's see what else was. Then the thought, my reptilian brain tickles, my gut spins pickles. Then that note to LNP as a Stargate. I like that thought. And then, don't you down some boys go forth boldly. That's a note to Star Trek. So you drop that in there, too.
Mm-hmm.
But the back end of this, there's a nice simple note to it. Words sent forth never die, buddy. That's how creation came about. A pinch of salt, prayers full of darn good humor, and bombs around your auntie's uncle twice removed. Nice. Humorous finish, too, Eric. Well done with this one. Thank you very much. All right, ma'am.
All right. Let's see what we have next. Well, since we just had one humorous, right, I think we might as well go on to the next. And so we have Lick, Lick, Lurp by Lawrence 67. And go ahead, Rex, and give that a read for us, please.
Lick, lick, slurp, the adventures of Nigel the Fat Cat and his homie, Alfie, in Lick, Lick, Slurp. Lick, lick. Hey, Nigel, what you doing? Oh, hey, Alfie, looky here. I can lick my balls.
Oh,
why? I don't know, but I saw that old alley cat doing it, and I thought I'd see what it was all about. It's kind of fun. You should try it. Well, okay, if you say so. Lick, lick. Alfie, not me. Do it to yourself. Oh, my bad. Lick, lick. And boom. All right,
oh, did you say my name?
Yeah.
Okay. I thought so, but I wasn't 100% sure because I actually was laughing out loud. First of all, your read, your performance, your slurping noise really added to the authenticity. This reminds me of the short yet sweet joke of why does a dog lick his balls? Because he can. And... I like the little misadventures of Alfie and Nigel, and the especially the question, you know, like, oh, hey, Alfie, looky here. I can lick my balls. Why? I don't know, but I saw that old alley cat doing it and thought, I should see what it was all about. It's kind of fun. You should try it. And then, of course, no, not mine, your own. But, you know, all the way through, just great humor. Very well done. You had me cracking up.
Thank you, Pam. And Lou, how about you?
Well, that alley cat must have liked what he was doing because he tried it himself. And the lesson here is you're not going to know if you like it till you do it, and you're not going to know if the other person likes it until you do it to him. Right?
Amen to that.
Lick, lick, lick.
Great read, Rex.
Yeah, it was a hell of a piece. Reminds me of Welcome, Darkness, My Old Friend. I see you visit once again to those sounds of slurping. Yes, this is definitely an after midnight train of thought there, Lawrence. Go, Alfie, go. But do it yourself first. Leave Nigel's balls alone.
Oh.
Oh, that was perfect. A good laugh there.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Dan.
up next, I have your poem, Lou. So go ahead and give it a read for us.
All right.
Oh.
Rational sensibility. Oh, my God. Slurp.
Oh, this is perfect timing.
That just fell right into it. Slurp.
Oh, man, I didn't notice that. Sorry.
Resting wounds, cruel enslaved notions, ridiculous spit potions. Shall we rail against captivity? Elite looking down in utter disgust. Service for education as a golden ring. Truth dressed in whore's greedy mouth. The fat lady sings as does oversprayed men's glossy hair and chirping fatty tissue. Aliens needed to pluck cotton fruit and, oh, so green avocado to place on the glutton's golden table. Paying under table wages, built cement walls, but so sorry, no medical. Unacceptable. Genetically modified ideal shoving him down, gulping throats, its synthetic thoughts. Swallow. Swallow till you're hollow. Yellow haze peyote cactus portrays lizard stung, licking claws, shredding the heaven descent. Wet pricking, trickling ruby claws. Economy says more. 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 Emerald smackers. Angel eyes, demon's wing, corruption, molding conformity, let my mind swim, feasting and open thinking. End poem.
Great read, Lou.
There you go.
Nice touch coming in at the back end of things. I didn't even see you there. All right, why don't you leave it there?
Oh, I really like this one. I'm so glad, Lou, that you couldn't sleep tonight and you checked out Rex's contest and was inspired. I do have to say, though, it did crack me up that the first two words of your poem was slurp,
slurp. I didn't do that on purpose. You set me up, Pam.
Oh, man. I didn't even notice. If I had noticed, I might have spaced. It was just a happy accident. So great. But I love the way you read with such emotion. There's such a biting edge to your voice. You can feel the seething anger at a society that's filled with greed and corruption. This has powerful imagery and metaphors that speak on the idea of avarice and, you know, people only thinking for themselves and what can I get for myself and what can I do for myself but not for other people. And it's the way that greed and self-absorption really disrupts what should be the natural beauty of life. I really like this all the way through, but especially the fat lady sings as does oversprayed men's glossy hair and chirping fatty tissues, aliens needing to pluck fruit, cotton fruit, and the oh so green avocado to place on the glutton's golden table. And that's even the whole idea of so many people just don't know where their food and their resources come from. Also the genetically modified ideals shoving down, gulping throats, its genetic thoughts, swallow, swallow till you're hollow. Trying to fill yourselves up with a false ideals when, you know, there's so much to be grasped spiritually and people aren't getting it. So amazing writing and very well done.
Thank you, Pam.
Yeah, I too had to laugh with the slurp, slurp. That was quite the notation coming off the licking balls in the last Actually, that last one was a perfect lead into this because this was brutal in its depiction and the truth which lies within it, especially those last three lines. Molding conformity, molding conformity. Let my mind swim, feasting and open thinking. And that is the current bill, which is not being actually used as a notion to reality. Open thinking. The idea that, hey, you know what? You keep conforming to a singularity, you're walking in cult dreams because you're not thinking for yourself. You're thinking in the name of someone else. And that doesn't work because, hey, everybody up way at the tippy top, they'll always have money. They'll always have the green. They'll always have the goods. But
yeah,
if you keep feeding it to them, they're going to want more. And it's your own fault for giving it to them because you're not thinking freely and with dissemination of the truths that you know. Nicely done,
yeah.
Lou.
Yeah, well, that's what he was all about, nonconformity.
Yes. And I like that thought of molding because it offers up two thoughts, the way you can mold someone, but also how if you let it go, it molds and rots.
Mm-hmm. Lovely.
A nice late entry there, Lou. I like it.
Thank you.
All right, Pam, where you want to go next?
All right, Rex. Well, up next I have your poem. So go ahead and give it a read for us, please.
Really? Where'd you put it?
I put it right in Late Night Poets. Silly.
All right. A feast of friends, full of wormwood pesties, lost in the dark of northern strains, where surfate blossoms, power, barracuda glass-eyed sermons, arms in the pockets of silver creatures, calling from radio waves, those erections glower. Wanting rose sips in their baths, not shower. Dig? Luke Garou testes that scrambled abortion, clubbed and mugged, raging blood. Mutant mania, cornmeal streams, redux chow. Awake that meld in Babylon mazes. Dost thou know it of the fire and those nine circles from Karen's crown? A writhing pandemonium of ruined flesh, undulating strangers, to this breakfast in 80s. Life makes demons of us all and gives us horns where once we had skulls, smooth as babies' arses. No more suited meat, nor fanciful breast, this other void flavored in milk and honey, until it's open more just ingest your obeisance, vegetables to sleep. I shan't go, for I prefer a feast of friends to a gathered muse in high brooms. And Paul.
Wonderful read and write, Rex. I'm very glad that you were inspired. And Lou, your thoughts?
You know, there's some really powerful imagery in here. This has your own special touch, especially with that opening stanza, which just totally pisses me off when I think about it. You're full of wormwood pesties, lost in the dark of northern strains, where Safit blossoms power, barracuda, ooh, I love that word, glass-eyed sermons, alms in the pockets of silver preachers calling from radio waves. You know, it's just the thing that we become accustomed to that do we no longer see, you know? You just can't see anymore. We're feeding and empowering the rich who don't need another penny. They don't need another penny. But yet, we still throw money at politicians. Like, why are you giving a billionaire money for his campaign? Let him freaking pay for it himself. These, you know, the preachers that, like when you travel in different countries, you will see these magnificent churches, but yet the people live in squalor. And I have always, my mom has always told me, and this so reminded me of what you said here. You know, and this even in the scripture, it's better to have a bowl of beans than to eat a fine meal, a fine steak with a bull. You know, and that's one thing my mom has always taught me. Those, I shan't go, for I prefer a feast of friends to gathered meals in high brew. And you tell me that is not the truth. Vegetables taste much better without a pain in the ass liar serving us the food or us serving them. Well penned, Rexy. Enjoyable. Well penned.
Thank you, Lou. Much appreciated.
Amen. Amen to that. Well said there, Lou. And that is so much truth there about the idea of being around false people. Brilliant imagery and metaphors throughout. The whole idea to me, it speaks to me on the idea of being true to yourself, of not putting up with the shit that other people, you know, dish out. I really like your choice of language in here. As Lou says, it has your own special touch. I like that you bring in the loop guru testes, the creature from Louisiana, which is like a dog body, that scrambled abortion, clubbed and mugged, raging blood, mutant mania, cornmeal streams, redux chow. You know, we live in a culture of death. We live in a culture of blood and pain, where people care more about what they can get for themselves than about lives. And also, I really like a writhing pandemonium of ruined flesh, undulating strangers to this breakfast in Hades. I like how you bring in this whole idea of the Babylon mazes and the breakfast in Hades, and the idea that, you know, there's a special place in hell reserved for those who just don't give a damn about the weakest in society. I mean, at least that's what a lot of it speaks to me on. So excellent write and very well done. And
thank you,
did you want to say anything about your, oh, you're welcome. Did you want to say anything about your poem?
It's just, I looked at, my thoughts to what Jim put up, just a different feel for it. It took me 10 minutes to write, and it took me an hour and a half to actually lay it out, which
cool.
Kind of par for the course.
Well, you know, it's nice that when the inspiration comes back quickly. So, very cool.
All right, what we got next?
Okay, well, that was the last of our rights inspired by Jim Morrison. So I have actually put on the board carryovers from the last Solace of Shadows show, which was The Who. And so I'll go ahead and start delving into those. And for anyone that doesn't know the band The Who, the H-U, I highly recommend checking them out on YouTube. They've got amazing music. They're a Mongolian band, and they sing a lot of times on their culture and their history. And they use a lot of drums and throat singing, and so it's really just amazing to listen to. And so with that being said, the first poem we have up from that is, and these ones are actually not from my contest, but from a contest a couple of years ago that Lawrence ran, but was on the same topic. So we have Illuminating My Journey with Violence by Duke of STP, Dex Daily, and it goes like this. Blood clot marks my rise, my design, your demise. Weave death like a web, get stuck and win a surprise. Father poisoned, mother taken, came from the fire like Satan. Where life is cheap, loyalty is king, our bonds, we can't break them. Everything is earned, soul of a slave, nothing is given. You're all going to pay, starting with the royal class. Life can't be bought, you will find out today. The scream from a warrior's heart, a child's fear as he is alone in the dark, a raped woman's anguish reincarnated as force of my sore when I send you to God. Everybody dies, no exceptions we make. Set the city on fire, close every gate. In search of eternal love, this world chose hate. Conqueror from birth, no escaping this fate. And poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. And Louie, why don't you kick us off?
You know, this is a powerful, powerful poem. I've got to say, I loved his rhyme scheme here. And I wrote in a previous comment, he wanted loyalty and valued the skill of his warriors. He did not care what your bloodlines were. Wealth meant nothing. Respect was earned, and earned was ranked. And I like that stanza where he put, everything is earned, soul of a slave, nothing is given. You're all going to pay, starting with the royal class. Life can't be bought. You will find out today. And there was a lot of treachery and death. Even when he would send emissaries, they would murder them. And he didn't take it. He paid back the payback death with massive death. Excellent poem, Dexter. An excellent read, Pam.
You're right on that. He was the scourge of the Outlands. Mm-hmm. Some of the best in class when riding horses. And they were used to smaller horses, and they were quite the riders way back then, with bow and arrow, and they were fierce warriors. And I do believe we've all hit on the note that it is Genghis Khan, but I do believe the proper pronunciation is Genghis.
Genghis.
And to this day, they still have never found his tomb. Because when he died, they buried him in a place where an honored place that no one would be allowed to ever find or note as to where his final resting place is. Well done, Dex. This was a powerful piece, just like the man. All right, Pam, what about you?
Absolutely. I like Dexter chose to write this in rhyme in that first three stanzas. It had a real, like, kind of rap-type feel to it. It was a powerful write that paid tribute to the man that was Genghis Khan, and how he was a warrior and somebody who believed that people needed to prove themselves on an individual basis. I liked learning, like, from his A.N., and that he put this information here that Genghis was born with a blood clot in his hand. In Mongolian belief, that is the sign that the child is the chosen one of the gods. You know, and I like that he used that as his opening line. Blood clot marks my rise, my design, your demise. Weave death like a web, get stuck and win a surprise. And yes, definitely the horse riding and archery was such an important part of their warrior culture. And I like that this pays tribute to that time period. And yet, at the same time, you can see in that third stanza how it relates to modern times also. Everything is earned, soul of a slave, nothing is given, you're all going to pay, starting with the royal class. Life can't be bought, you will find out today. And I know that refers to the Genghis Khan's takeover and the empire that they built. But I also feel like it can give a nod towards the idea of people nowadays who think that their money, their wealth, and their position can get them whatever they want. So excellent write and very well done.
Nice. So what we got next?
All right. Up next, we have Genghis Khan's Legend by Betty Page. And Lou, go ahead and give that a read for us, please.
Thank you. It'd be my honor. Genghis Khan's Legend by Betty Page. Fierce warriors completely obliterate, slashing millions as their souls arise. Deep into your soul, fiery eyes penetrate. Ancient warriors so viciously wise, slice. Genghis Khan shot very swiftly, face to face with his assassins. Zurgadi proudly begs for no mercy. Once enemy, Khan then turns to friend. Fierce warriors completely obliterate, slashing millions as their souls arise. Deep into your soul, fiery eyes penetrate. Ancient warrior so viciously wise. Spreading his seed, birthing an empire, 16 million bleed Genghis Khan's blood with intellect, sword, spear set on fire, multiplying in power like a human flood. Fierce warriors completely obliterate, slashing millions as their souls arise. Deep into your soul, fiery eyes penetrate. Ancient warrior so viciously wise. Buried with 40 horses and 40 virgins, tales be told forever of Genghis Khan, Mongolian leader, father to nations. His legend through his own flesh lives on and on in poem.
Great read, Lou. I like that repeat stanza. Fierce warriors completely obliterate, slashing millions, souls arise. Deep into your soul, their fire eyes penetrate, ancient warriors so viciously wise. It's kind of a nice note to almost a chant, like the legend sweeping across Asia itself. Well done, Betty. This is all right, Pam. What do you think?
Oh, I liked this one. It was definitely another powerful write, a great one, the paying honor to the spirit of a warrior, the empire that he created. This part is actually true. Spreading his seed, birthing an empire, 16 million bleed Genghis Khan's blood. There's actually a study done where they found out that approximately, and this is only the men, it's something like one in every 200 men.
Yes.
16 million people worldwide share the genetic ancestry of Genghis Khan. And that was quite a normal part of society then in many cultures. It wasn't, unheard of for a lot of cultures to have more than one wife. And sometimes the marriages were often more times for political gain than, love. But the idea of political gain that comes from the right partnerships. I like the imagery in this. I like how you can tell she did her research. The repeat stanza was also nice. And the lines of fierce warriors completely obliterate, slashing millions as their souls arise. Deep into your soul, fiery eyes penetrate, an ancient warrior so viciously wise. And he really was. I mean, he was vicious and he was a warrior, but he was also very intelligent with the way he approached his campaign. So excellent write and very well done.
And Lou, you got the read. How about you?
Lou dropped.
Oh,
no.
Okay.
Oh, she says, sorry, coughing, had to disconnect. All right.
Okie dokie.
Bummer. Look.
Lou.
All right.
Water is hot as you can take it. Apple cider vinegar, 1 tablespoon. 1 tablespoon of honey. Gargle. All right. Where are we going?
Did you comment on this one? Okay. I guess I'm sorry. I don't know how I missed that.
But you get when I'm paying attention.
Yeah. Oh, man. Well, yeah. All that multitasking, that'll do it. My brain can only, focus on so much at a time. So, but I'm sure it was a brilliant comment. All right, so let's see what we have next. All right, well, then up next we have A Force of Nature by Archdoom DeVille. And go ahead, Rex, and give that a read.
A Force of Nature by Archdoom DeVille. In the night's embrace, she whispers my name. A force of nature, igniting passion like a flame. A melody, my heart sways. Enchantments from my throat. A siren's call, a rhythm that stirs my senses, igniting my all. The world in your grasp, power unfold, a force of nature that cannot be controlled. In life, pleasure, and everything in between, her beauty is a dream, you have seen like a queen. A temptation I cannot resist, her allure, a flame that ignites, impossible to endure. She's a mother, temptress, goddess, and divine. Power like fire, impossible to confine. A force of nature, wild and uncontrolled. A passion that leaves breathless. A love like honey drips to the kiss on beat. A balm that soothes my deepest wounds, heals my soul. A gift of love that always stands, makes me whole. When kings fall to their knees, they sing her song. Her beauty and power, they can't be wrong, so strong. A symbol of love, passion, and survival, so sure. A muse that ignites my creativity, that's for sure. Beauty like a star, shining bright. A light that shines from near and far, pure delight. A spirit like a dove, descends from above. A symbol of purity, peace, and love. I whisper her name in the depths of the night. Praying she'll hear me so on the night. For she is my goddess, my queen, my desire. My passion that I forever adore, my heart's fire. And poem. Right,
Ian,
what you got?
All right. First of all, great read there, Rex. This was actually the one right from mine and Robert contest that I had forgotten to get read last week. And he was actually inspired by the song Song of Women, which is both done by both The Who and Lizzie Hale. Like they both, it's a collaboration song that they sung together. And the original song, the song itself pays tribute to the strength and the beauty and the light of all women. And I like that Archdoom DeVille, who has just recently started writing for our shows, and I've been very glad to see his work on our shows and look forward to reading more of him. I like that he writes this about an individual woman. Great rhyme and flow here. I like amazing imagery. I thought it was a wonderful write on honoring the loving heart and the inner flame of an individual woman. I really like, she's a lover, temptress, goddess, divine, her power like fire impossible to confine. A force of nature, wild and controlled, a passion that leaves me breathless to behold. Yeah, I think if you're lucky enough to find a wild woman with an inner fire that burns bright, you should continue to allow it to burn bright. And I think that goes for any partnership. You know, if your partner has an inner fire, let it continue to burn. I also really like that second to last stanza. Her spirit, like a dove, descends from above, a symbol of purity, peace, and love. It really has a wonderful spiritual nature to it. Wonderful, right, and very well done.
Nice. Well, I'm going to have to go a little different. I won't say it's about a woman, although it is about a woman, but not in the same way he's offering it up. I'm going with Ceridwen, the Celtic goddess of the moon, because this walks all in that realm. And the thought of her being his muse offers up those notes of Arwen, which is comes from. And this brings forth with just that, the igniting passions like a flame. In night's embrace, she whispered my name, that call to the moon itself, emblazoning the night sky. A lover, temptress, goddess divine, her power like fire, impossible to confine, a force of nature wild and uncontrolled, a passion leaping breathless to behold. Again, everything in this speaks of Arwen and that love of Ceridwen itself. So I'm going to roll on that note. Nicely done, Archdoom.
I like that thought. Very cool there. Very unique and original, and the idea of honoring the muse, the goddess of poetry. Very cool. I like that. All right. And up next, I'm going to put my poem, which was inspired by the three songs in the contest, and is, I guess, like a Senru or 575 chain. And it's called The People Dancing. And it goes like this. Tengri creator forming the east and the west, controlling life and death. Audyesi burns, mother of the rising flame, splitting earth and sky. The people dancing beneath the indigo sky, red dust is rising, brother wolf singing, the hawk circling the sun, the dawn is embraced, warriors are strength, women are the nation's heart, through hardship dancing, the war is raging, drums of battle are pounding, blood is pouring out, horse and man are one, running across the brown land, enemies slaughtered, ancient earth weeping, flesh is bowing down to death, the vultures are hungry, life continues on, pride bows not to tyranny, blood and earth are one, strong voices rising, birth and death creates balance, the people dancing, history whispers the dark truth of violence, traditions of war, the eyes of women weeping in the golden light, spirits become free, pounding feet tread stones, stories are told through our songs, strength and honor merge, remember the past, changing times are forthcoming, old ways must be held, and home.
Great reading, thank you very much. I like that note, Tengri creator forming east and the west, controlling life and death. But it walks so much in ancient cultures, right from, you look at, it doesn't matter, you go to the thoughts of Easter Island, Egyptians to Sumeria to Babylonia, all the way down the line. It all walks in that note of east and west, control of the sun and its passport across the sky, and the moon that lies beyond, that awakening. I like that. People dancing beneath the indigo sky, red dust is rising, red dust is rising. That's a lot of horse stomping across the tundra. Brother wolf singing, the hawk circling its sun, the dawn is embraced. I like the notes and the vultures. Vultures are hungry. Everything gets fed, or did get fed,
within this world, and still does today. Things that die on the road, in the woods, or wherever, everything gets fed back into nature, whether it's the carry-out eaters or the bugs that eventually break everything down to reinvigorate the earth with all of the minerals that saturate the bodies themselves. You've got the dark truth of violence, tradition of war. And most important one note here. Pride bows not to tyranny. Blood and earth are one. True? Ancient times and ancient wars, something never changed.
Amen to that. And yes, great observations, Rex, especially in the first stanza. Tengri was actually the Mongolian mythology was the creator god, and Od Esi, although I admit I'm not 100% sure I'm pronouncing her name right, was actually is a goddess of fire that was born when the earth was split from the sky. So thank you. Thank you very much for the comment. All right, up next we have what was actually an open darkness poem that was shared on the board and that I didn't get to, and that is Memory's Door by C.L. Howard. And go ahead, Rex, and give that a read for us, please.
Memory's Door by C.L. Howard. The cracked stone mantle, charred and burned, above the hearth of memory's mire, meat cut from the slowest deer, hangs from a hook within the fire. And so, I pour a glass of brandy, brown beyond days of old blood, sip it slow in hope of pleasure, but in my mouth it tastes of mud. The walls around me, rotten, wooden, where once in frames a family hung, vacant, faceless shadows forming, lapping mouths before the tongue, echoes of a ghastly ending. Tear the eye, scrape the skull, rid me of all thought by measure, and by measure pleasure home. Slowly, gently carve the muscle, scrape the charred and burning meat, dip it in the muddy brandy, breathe the smoke of burning feet. A painted carousel on the mantle, dancing children on the stone, laughing, smiling, chasing treasures, while here I sit and watch alone. Standing, I approach the hearthstone and the stone charred and burned. Wind the orb of dancing memories, watch the past once more within. As I watch the shades before me, relive their life but long ago, I poke the fire, sip the brandy, watch the ashen embers glow. In the distance, I hear laughter, children and a woman sing. Deep inside, I wish to join them, hand in hand, ring to ring. Slowly now the drinking takes me, numbness bids my mind to sleep. And so I drift off into darkness, beside the fire within my keep. In the morning, only dungeon, house and room burned in black. Silent walls now empty mock me of the life I have but can't have back. Perhaps tonight when I grow weary, I'll see the past return once more, then happily venture off to join them, finally close this memory's door. And boom.
Wonderful read there, Rex. And I have to say, this poem really just tugged at my heartstrings. The well deserved gold. It does bring tears to my eyes. It speaks so strongly on love and loss and you know, the pain that you feel. I know with the loss that CL suffered with the loss of his son, it just, I can't imagine that kind of pain. And I like that, you know, he's able to express it with poetry and that he has poetry as an outlet. This has wonderful rhyme and flow. I have to say that I think it's actually really great for this show because of the fact that it speaks on death and it speaks on life and it speaks on memories. I feel like it actually fits, and the fact that it's titled Memory's Door, It fits really well in with the Jim Morrison prompt. I all the way through just these powerful lines, but I really like echoes of a ghostly ending, tear the eye and scrape the skull, rid me of all thoughts by measure, and by measure pleasure call. Slowly, gently carve the muscle, scrape the charred and burning meat, dip it in the muddy brandy, breathe the smoke of burning heat. You know, the visceral imagery, speaking on the idea of sometimes just craving that self-destruction that will take us away from the sadness of life. Amazing lines and very well done.
Well said. All right. The bite in this, I think, is that last stanza. Perhaps tonight when I grow weary, I'll see the past return once more, then happily venture off to join them and finally close this memory's door. That memory's door kind of hits the notion of closure. There are questions unanswered, especially since the whole family got ripped apart because of this, and that burn and charred angle, not just the meat, the taste of the brandy, the bit of the deer itself. Nothing tastes as sweet anymore because of that loss. And it's a nagging ache that cannot be carved out because it's such a fresh notation with no closure to it. No real answers, no whys, no what was, or anything else. And that in itself can break somebody if they're not careful. But this isn't as much a break as offering up a ringing note for letting it out, maybe bearing one's soul to the point where there is a touch or a shade of closure that might aid in the healing process. So, nicely done, CL. Thank you very much.
Oh, absolutely. And wonderful observations there, Rex, especially on the thought of needing to find some sort of closure for the whys of life when difficult things like that happen. And I have to say, great show tonight.
Yes, thank you very much. Great show, Pam. Thank you, Randy and Lou, for dropping in to help us out with reading and commenting. And for, let's see, Hats and Christopher and Jen and Selena up for the boards. Thank you all very much. Much appreciated. And we'll see you Sunday for Rhythm and Rhyme for Rossing and Collins. And we'll do this again next Tuesday morning, Monday after midnight. So have a good night, everybody. And thank you very much.